Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us. I have in the studio Pima County Attorney Laura Conover. And on the phone, if you remember from last week, we had Lieutenant Colonel Hal Kempfer, who is a retired Marine and the CEO of GRIP. And we're going to get a little bit of an update on what's going on and in Ukraine. And we've got some questions for you. I understand that Putin asked China for help. Does that show a sign of weakness?
Good morning, Sherry. Not really. Basically, it's a strategic dialogue is really what's going on. Because Putin cozied up, and it's not something brand new, but they've been trying to cozy up together for some time as a strategic alliance. They're not a natural fit. And in terms of trade, they're definitely not a natural fit. But they have one common interest, which is they both oppose the United States. And so he's reached out to them to get ammunition, basically caliber cruise missiles, artillery rounds, and then these rockets that they use like artillery, and have them ship them over. We picked up on this. We put it out there. Our information operations campaign's pretty good in that regard. And basically, we were just warning them the consequences if they help Russia. And I think it was actually more of a strategic dialogue. It wasn't so much asking them for help. It was more like warning them the consequences if they help Russia. It's probably a better way to look at it.
I know at one point they were talking about our astronauts that are working with Russian astronauts right now. And there was a concern that they might leave our astronaut up there because they're using a Russian vehicle to go back and forth. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, to go back and forth, I don't think they're going to leave an astronaut stranded in space. Although I right now I imagine at NASA, there's a very deliberate troubleshooting process going through as far as
you can call that
happened.
Mission Uber.
Yeah, it's something like that. It's almost in some ways, I imagine the planning process sounds like something out of a Hollywood script. But there's a lot of things. You know, there's certain things even during the tensest times, we've always seen able to work out this arrangement with ISS. And there was some really over-the-top language about letting the ISS, you know, fall out of orbit in the future, you know, not keeping it aloft. And I think a lot of this was rhetoric. You know, I think I just saw today that they're doing a crew transfer up there. And interestingly, the Russian cosmonaut showed up wearing yellow. And the commander of the cosmonauts said, well, it's just we happen to have yellow as part of our stuff. It's like, yeah, that's a very subtle signal that,
yeah, you know, I saw that. I was like, oh, they're trying to send a message.
So anyway, I think they're going to get this worked out. At least I hope so. But I know a little bit about how NASA does some planning. And they're very good at it. They do troubleshooting like nobody's business. And they're going to figure this out.
Well, I was wondering, too, after I saw what their show of support by wearing the yellow and the blue on top of it. And there was a photograph on the Internet. And I was wondering, are they subject to just listening to Russian propaganda, or are they getting the news from the rest of the world as well?
Well, I can't tell you for sure because I don't know what they listen to. Obviously, they get a ton of Russian propaganda, but got to remember, everybody going up there is pretty tech savvy, and they're working with they work with other nations, not just the U.S., but they work with other nations in that astronaut training program. And so my guess is they're getting some pretty good feed on what's going on. I think just by the looks of things, literally, they've got a pretty good idea of what's happening. So.
Well, the other question was about the athlete who's being held there because of her cannabis oil. What's up with that? I You know, it wasn't like she was smoking joints. She had cannabis oil.
That's, you know, part of it is Russia has been cracking down on a lot of things. And they view cannabis oil in very differently than we view it over here. With that said, with the way things are going, I wouldn't put it beyond Russia to have planted something like that in her bag. That's very possible. They're very skilled at the, shall we say, the dark arts.
Okay.
And setting up something like that is certainly not beyond plausibility. I mean, she may have had that in there, but on the other hand, they may have planted it. They just extended her detention, as it were, into mid-May.
I saw that. I was like, what's up with that? Is she being used as an example? We've got her. Ha ha.
Well, actually, that's probably about it. Yeah, they've got her, and they are using her, and I have no doubt that they want to use her as a bargaining chip at some point, maybe to try and negotiate a release of somebody that we have. I don't know if you just saw, interesting, that was happening, and at the same time, a bunch of Russian diplomats were kicked out of the Baltic states. And you could say that, hey, this is all unrelated, not to Russia. You know, that's NATO. U.S. is part of NATO. This is something they're using as a bargaining chip. And all these things are happening. You know, the other thing, too, is they're getting a little desperate. You know, I mean, when we tell Americans to get out of Russia, and we told certainly all Americans to get out of Ukraine, it's a dangerous place. Yeah. And it's dangerous. It's dangerous because of Vladimir Putin and what he's doing.
I couldn't believe he was on a stage, that whole thing at the stadium, that, you know, he was spewing his propaganda and acting like, you know, he's all that in a bag of chips, and the rest of the world's going, oh, why doesn't somebody take him out? Perfect.
Well, it was actually interesting. You know, when I look back at that, a couple of things. Well, first off, and, you know, it's possible that they had a technical glitch on their television production of that.
But how probable?
But it was interesting. First off, the way he did it, it was almost no notice. And a lot of the people who were told that they had to be there, who worked in government offices and things like that, they were told, we're going to this thing and you have to go, okay? And they were given some sort of story. So they rolled up. They didn't even realize what it was. And that's an old security thing. You know, Secret Service, you know, does that. If nobody knows you're going to show up, like if the president or something shows up someplace, it lowers the threat because if they don't know he's going to be there, nobody could have prepared. So there's a certain threat parameter, and that was obviously used there so he could get up on a stage in front of all those people and look like he's safe and secure. And I think that's what he wanted to do, was to present the image that he was safe and secure. And then he, of course, delivered his bizarre interpretation, all the lies and the fabrications that are out there. And listening to it, you know, you sit there and go, you know, it's not good that he's putting out these lies and fabrications. You hope to God he doesn't believe anything he's actually saying. Because if that's the case, then he's in a separate universe.
Yeah, he's a case for the couch, for sure.
Couch or the padded room.
Padded room.
One of the two. Yeah, but he's a... You just hope that he's somewhere in there, that KGB trained mind is just putting out, you know, the classic Soviet disinformation, but he does have at least some semblance of reality that he's touching. But he's walled himself off. He's put himself in such a bubble. I'm very nervous that he just is increasingly losing touch with reality. And certainly as the news from the battlefield gets worse.
Yeah, he's had a lot of people, heads of his military have been killed.
He's just lost a lieutenant general, the 8th Combined Arms Army. there's not that many combined arms armies involved. It's just a few. And he lost a couple deputy commanders of combined arms army, and now he's lost a commander. That's extraordinary. I was kind of searching my mind to remember any time, certainly not in such a short time frame, that many general officers were lost in a military campaign like that. We've never seen anything like it. I think we've lost generals, but it's very rare that a general officer, because first off, the general officers generally have pretty good security around them. That tells me that these general officers, two things are happening. Number one is they're exposing themselves to enemy fire, and that's probably because their units are not performing. So they're having to go down there right at the front lines to try and get them to do something. Second thing is it says a lot about Ukrainian intelligence. You usually see something, you go, okay, all right, was exposed to fire, and then it'll come out like a day or two later that Ukrainian intelligence had picked up on something. One of the problems that the Russians have is not just command and control, not just the fact that their troops are literally wounding themselves intentionally. Their self-mutilation is a term that they were using, which I find interesting using in a military context, that they were actually having someone shoot them with Ukrainian weapons so that they wouldn't have to go into combat. But the Ukrainian intelligence has been picking up on their radio because they're encrypted. Their covered radio system, where they use encryption so people can't listen to it, has apparently been breaking down. So they're sending messages in the clear, where you can hear them. Like a police scanner, you can hear messages.
Right.
Well, the Ukrainians are picking up on these tactical messages, and they're able to piece things together to figure out where some of these senior leaders are. And it's not just the generals. It's the commanders. There was an attack a few days ago, a tank regiment, and they killed, and right off the bat, they killed the regimental commander.
Wow.
And that just speaks volumes to the effectiveness of Ukrainian intelligence.
And presumably Russia was not prepared for that, you would think. Didn't expect that level of intelligence
It's interesting you say that. You're absolutely right. They didn't expect a lot of things. One of the things that came out this last week was that they were talking about the fact that for Putin, he's an intelligence officer, and originally he was a counterintelligence officer, which, right. Counterintelligence in their foreign intelligence service. Those guys, and certainly under the Soviet system, that makes you very paranoid. They're always looking for spies within their own ranks. And that's where he actually came from. So that has served him, well, shall we say, in many things. But one of the things he did here, in order to maintain secrecy of what his actual intent was, what came out this last week was he apparently hid a lot of the planning for the Ukraine operation from the military staff, just so what he was intending to do would not leak out.
Smart.
which translates to all those little things you have to do, which are really big things, logistics, things to prepare for communications, all these other things that they're supposed to do, didn't really happen. He could put the big pieces into place, but you need a full military staff to get into the details.
Yeah.
And so he's talking about, his little scheme maneuver with the decapitation strike on the Ukrainian government leadership, in Kyiv, but he's not talking to the military, which looks at this in a different fashion and does the whole staff planning process where they make sure that they have enough bullets and band-aids and everything else that a military, and gas and
logistics,
everything else that the military needs.
Yeah.
Logistics. Yeah. So, and that way, the British have a great phrase, too clever by half. And I think that describes Putin and what he did with the planning for this campaign.
No, I think everything else he did was such a walk in the park that he thought he could do the same thing with Ukraine and thank God these people are standing up for themselves and in fighting for their country, and hopefully the world will take note. I'm just still shocked that nobody's going in there and taking, you know, Russia, putting them back in their place. So we could talk all day on this, I'm sure. but I want to thank you. Yeah. I've seen you on probably every news station. And
well, thanks. Yeah.
It's been really informative, and I thank you for calling in this morning and bringing us up to date. In my heart, I think we're in World War III, but we'll keep calling it Putin's war instead.
Well, let's hope the Ukrainians keep winning, and let's hope we send, you know, let's hope Russia goes, you know, whatever comes out of this, let's hope they disengage. They've taken huge losses, and really keep our fingers crossed. Let's hope that there's a regime change in Moscow.
Yes.
And maybe this will be a really bad footnote, a historical footnote of what Russia did, you know, the attempt at the Soviet reunion. But it won't be the auspices of a larger war. Just hope.
I hope not.
So.
Okay.
All
well,
right. Well, thank you, Sherry.
Thank you for calling in.
Thanks.
Take care. Okay. In the studio, we have Pima County Attorney Laura Conover. How are you?
Good morning. I'm thrilled to be here. And that was fascinating. You know, that's far outside my bailiwick. But as a lifelong learner, that was fascinating to listen to.
Yeah, he was on last week, and there were some lingering questions. And as things progressed during the week, I'm getting emails saying, you know, hey, ask him this. He's back on, right? And I'm like, well, maybe I'll give him a call. So, yeah, he's just a really nice guy, but so smart. So smart when it comes to this. Let's talk about Pima County.
You bet.
Yeah, something closer to home.
My favorite topic. 1.1 million favorite people.
Really?
That's our right around 1.1 million. Yeah, it's such a massive, beautiful, diverse county. And also when you think about it, the people and geographically, how massive the space is.
It is. It's huge. Yeah. It's like, you know, people call me and say, "Hey, can you do this?" You know, and I'm like, "You know how big Pima County is?"
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, you asked me to drive like 300 miles.
Right.
So let's start with the homicide rate. What's going on with this locally?
That's what I wanted to lead off with, Sherry, because I think it's on our minds constantly throughout the county. And for us in the office, it remains priority number one for us. The homicide rate will be studied for decades, and I would add to it a domestic violence spike as well. It's both. And they both started at the beginning of the pandemic. And I think it'll be studied for decades as to why that correlates. And it's happening nationwide, but we live here. And, right. You know, my mom turned 70 last month and lives in Midtown, and so it hits home. What we're doing in the Pima County Attorney's Office is trying to have a really laser-specific approach to what's happening. So we've had a lot of success, thank goodness, in bringing back some really talented veteran homicide prosecutors from the Attorney General's Office, from other counties, back from private practice, from the firms, luring them back into perhaps more exciting work. And thank goodness they came back to pitch in so that we're fully staffed in that area and we can handle it. Because it's a lot on us. It has meant that every single Monday is homicide panel day. And so we spend the morning going over all the reports of about three or four cases, and then we spend the afternoon on presentations with our veteran prosecutors and with law enforcement in the room, the case detectives from the various homicides, to try to resolve three or four every single Monday. So it's it's intensive, it's brutal work, but it's really critical.
Why do you think homicides have increased?
I think in both homicide and domestic violence, the lockdown,
people stuck at home.
People stuck at home, not having outlets for stress and anxiety and anger, not having outlets, as many outlets to seek help as things start to escalate, less eyes on each other. You never know when you intervene for someone, especially in the domestic violence, sexual assault arena. Neighbors checking on neighbors means more than you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we were prevented from normal life because of the pandemic. And I think just generalized anxiety, Sherry, and just a quick trigger on anger. Has been pervasive across the country, perhaps across the world, in trying to deal with the pandemic. I mean,
it's something you can't see and touch and put your fingers on. It's like, okay, there's this thing that we can't. It's not tangible.
Right. And it's hard to articulate it, but we know it when we see it. I mean, we had two homicides in the office last year over a parking spot. I mean, the individuals literally did not know each other. There was no history, and it was over a parking spot twice. And you can see it on the roads. The Governor's Office of Highway Safety has talked about
road rage
yeah. and speed. It'll be, again, the data is fascinating, right? We want our criminal justice system driven by data. And there's another data point, is that driving went way down in the pandemic, and yet accidents went way up. We have a lot to learn from what's been going on in the last 24 months now, two years now. But it's incumbent upon us to go right in and do everything we can for the community in the midst of it.
We are doing an event, I think you know about it, the front line of sex trafficking on the 2nd of April. And there's going to be a lot of people there, including the Pima County Attorney's Office. It's going to be represented, and everybody should go to that event. It's going to be huge. You're going to learn a lot. You're going to learn how to protect your kids and your family. And if teachers, I think teachers should be there. And you're talking about recruitment in, you know, the domestic violence thing. Are you familiar with the hand signal, the international hand signal for help?
I'm not sure I am.
The put your palm up, tuck your thumb, and close your fingers over it. Wow. And that was started by a Canadian woman's, I think the Canadian Woman's Foundation started it, and it's actually taken off, and it's actually saved lives. So we're going to demonstrate that at this event as well.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And get the word out so people can understand that, you know, hey, you don't have to be there on your own. There's help out there. People will help you, and you don't have to yell help. You can use this little hand signal, and people will get the message.
Right.
You're in a situation. You're talking about recruitment and retention at the attorney's office. What's going on there?
I'm really excited and I'm relieved. We started fighting for office-wide salary increases a week after the primary election in August 2020, when I was technically still just on the ballot, but I knew it would be
huge.
A long haul. That it's not easy to do, and the county had to come together, stakeholders, to study it. But we had some good points on our side, which was that the office had not had an office-wide salary increase since 1997.
Wow!
So we were able to argue it was time, And on, especially on the criminal side, our friends in Pinal County developed their own recruitment plan, which was to offer a $30,000 pay increase and a shuttle to drive our prosecutors up to Pinal County, which of course was a you know, not something most people could turn down. And so Pima County would train up prosecutors, and then just when they were ready to start taking on major crime, Pinal would sweep in with that offer. So I was way out on a limb, Sherry, by saying, look, if we can raise salaries appropriately to not all the way up to Pinal, but something I can compete with, then people will stay and people will come back. And thank goodness that did happen. That did happen. I'm so grateful for the veterans who've come back in to join us and help. And then, of course, all the brand new attorneys who are starting their career with us. That's easily got to be one of my favorite parts of the job. They're so talented, they're so brilliant, they're so excited and full of energy. And you can see
graduates of the U of A.
Yes, largely.
They're all Wildcats.
Largely,
so we're safe.
I try to not be biased, but this is my home and that's my alma mater. And yes, of course. And so then you can sort of see where the agency's headed and be full of hope.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And it seems like this pay thing is across the board with the sheriff's departments, with, you know, the police departments, everybody. It's like we need to start paying people so they can work one job and live.
Yeah, it was a countywide problem, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I really applaud the Board of Supervisors and the County Administrator's Office for and County HR for giving that 5% boost across countywide. It was really critical.
So you came in with some ideas about preventing crime and how to deal with the bad actors. So talk to us about what's going on in that arena.
Well, one thing I can say, Sherry, is that for decades, the criminal justice system has been purely reactive, and that's hard. It's hard on our people. And what I mean by that is that the harm has already happened. By the time our professionals get to dig in on a case, harm has already occurred. And that can be very frustrating, to just constantly be receiving files full of harm out in our community. And so we really want our policies to be solution oriented, and we want to be out in the community. Research shows that as we clean up our neighborhoods, as we clean up in front of and behind small businesses, these things matter. It's sort of the broken window concept. You know, beautifying neighborhoods and bringing, again, neighbors out to meet each other, check on each other. You really do see the crime rate start to tick down. And it's a long game. It's the long game. You have to be patient. But that's what we do most Saturday mornings.
You know, it's interesting because I remember growing up, everybody knew everybody. If I did something at the other end of the block that somebody didn't like, by the time I got home, my parents knew about it.
Right.
And it wasn't like, you know, oh, stop, you know, stop parenting my child, or, you know, you have no right to do this. If Mr. Lenz at the end of the street yelled at me, when I got home, I got yelled at again. I mean, it's just, right, that's the way it was. And Mr. Lenz was right. You know, you don't do that. You don't throw rocks. You don't, you know, right, pick flowers out of the neighbor's garden. There are things you don't do.
Right.
And now it's like, you know, it's my child. I'll raise them the way I want to. And it seems like people are, supporting the bad guys rather than the good guys in some respects. And it's like, here's a bad guy and he's getting away with it. So all of a sudden he's a hero. And I don't understand that concept.
Well, again, I think in the last 2 years, there has been sort of this attitude shift, and I think it it's because we became so isolated and sort of fending for ourselves. And that was a real challenge for us as a new administration coming in January of last year. It was pre-vaccine. And I didn't want to become isolated from the community that I work for. And so, you know, credit goes to Patrick Robles, our community outreach coordinator, for saying, well, we'll do it outside. We'll gather on Saturday mornings and we'll pick up trash. We have these really fun grabbers. The kids love them, right? These Inspector Gadget grabbing tools,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
we play music. We have donuts at the end, of course. And you make it fun. And then that's exactly what the result was, Sherry, was neighbors were able to safely check on each other again. And something that I think you especially and your listeners care about is it also was an opportunity for to delicately and sensitively bring in non-uniformed police officers who work in those neighborhoods and are responsible for those areas. And you had, so you just had normal human fun, relaxed, informal connecting between neighbors and law enforcement so that trust can be built and connections yeah. can be made, because that's critical. We need to know each other and trust each other. And we see what happens in other communities when that trust falls apart and disappears.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a few. Thanks for staying with us. Our guest today is Pima County Attorney Laura Conover, and we're talking about everything. We've gone from Ukraine to local crime. Let's talk about the fraud unit.
Ooh, yes. Well, that's another favorite topic. I'll tell you, Sherry, the background was that when I filed to run for office, it was November of 2019. So I had these 4 months of a normal campaign before the world closed down. And at the time, I thought I was going to move across this massive, beautiful county geographically, and you know, without any prioritization, I just started out in Green Valley and Quail Creek and in that area, and spent a lot of time there in the winter. And every single home, every single person I met knew someone who had been targeted by some level of fraud or scam.
Yeah.
And it became clear that retirement communities were being targeted, that it was deliberate, and it made my blood boil. And so truly, as part of that experience, it was informational, it was educational. I learned that the office hadn't had a dedicated fraud unit in 20 years. And it ended up becoming kind of a serious part of my platform, was that we needed a dedicated fraud unit. And by late February, I thought they were way too ambitious, but by late February, just a few weeks into the administration, in time for National Consumer Protection Week, we launched our fraud unit, and we launched the Southern Arizona Anti-Fraud Task Force, which is a monthly crew of about 35 people from every single agency, the fraud detectives from every unit, the fraud prosecutors from all the area prosecutorial offices, and they share intelligence, because that's the best way to track fraud, is you follow the signs and the habits, and you see the patterns that emerge, and then you can dig into the sources and where it's coming from, and you can really get into prevention. So we had well over a dozen lectures and reached over 1,000 people last year on how to protect themselves from fraud and scam.
Okay, last week, Saturday, I think it was Saturday, I got a text message from somebody who identified themselves as Jacqueline whoever and said, hey, can you do a favor for me? And I need this and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, who are you? And she said, well, I need to get a gift card for the chapter. I said, what chapter? And she got offensive. You know, like, why are you asking me questions? Well, because I don't know who the hell you are.
Right.
And then she and I said, what chapter? What's the name of the chapter? And she said, FCEA. So that tells me they know I'm a member of FCEA. Mm. I'm also a member of InfraGuard. I'm a member of a lot of things. All they have to do is go to a website and see that, Wow, she's busy. So she said, FCEA. So then she said she wanted me to go buy $2,000 worth of gift cards, photograph the front and the back, plus the receipt, and send it to her. And I told her I'd get that done as soon as I was done with laundry, dinner, and taxes. Well, that didn't stop her. An hour later, she said, where are we on this? And so I said, well, you know what? I'm not that familiar with gift cards, so I gave it to a friend to do for you. He'll call you shortly. He works for the FBI. I didn't hear another word from her. But there are people out there who would run to the store and buy the gift cards.
Right, exactly. And that's why we do the prevention lectures. And I would always say, I would say, thank you so much for being here. However, by being here, it tells me you're already alert to the problem of fraud and scam. And so what I need you to do after this lecture is I need you to check on your neighbors and family, those people who might be vulnerable to it.
Yeah.
Why it was so disturbing, Sherry, seeing it in Green Valley and Quail Creek is because they wait for people to come back home from surgery. They target people who are heavily medicated. They target people whose memory is starting to slip and who aren't going to be alert, can't be alert to the fact that this is a fraud and scam. And so I also always encourage people to have their financial partner, I call it. You know, if you've got the spouse, the adult child, the sibling, the best friend, but someone who's trusted, and you always check with them before making a significant purchase.
Yeah.
You know, even insignificant can be $100. You know, just check, run it by them first, and then vice versa, before you make a purchase like that, before you go buy the gift card, especially if it's a stranger.
Yeah, somebody's saying send a gift card. And this particular text message, she was acting like I'm supposed to know who she is.
Right.
I had no clue who she was.
Right,
but
right.
But I've got her phone number.
Well, and Sherry, that it gets so advanced. They will use your best friend's name. The grandparent one scam, right? Where they have the grandchild's name, or it's hey Jerry, it's Bob's grandson, right? It's your best friend's grandson. And the names are correct.
Yeah.
Right? It's so again, check with your partner. Check with your trusted loved one, best friend, whoever it is, before you make the purchase. You know, does this seem right?
Now, if somebody wants you to pay your electric bill with a gift card, maybe not.
Pause and slow it down. There's always an urgency.
Yeah.
Pause and slow it down. Ask questions just like you did, Sherry, and then the story falls apart.
Yeah. It's really sad. And I've had several. I've had the IRS have, you know, a warrant out for my arrest.
Right.
I'm like...
Right.
Great, 3 squares a day and a roof over my head. Just kidding. Okay, let's talk about victim services.
The crown jewel. I call it the crown jewel. It truly is a testament to the former administration and their dedication to victim services, to the state of Arizona's dedication to victim services and the Victims Bill of Rights. And that team, Sherry, is just extraordinary. They, you know, if all of our listeners don't know, they respond out to scenes, mm-hmm, day and night. They build armies of volunteers across the county to be there and to provide services in moments of trauma. And then they track the cases, the court team, then we'll track the case all the way through so that loved ones and families and victims have professional support throughout the pendency of their case. And if our listeners don't know, the team includes 3 full-time employees of the 4-legged kind.
You have 3 now?
We do. Baja, Blake, and Arrow are our courthouse dogs, and they are extraordinary. And I will say, Sherry, that the concept is easy to understand and to support, that they're trained, highly trained professional dogs who provide comfort. But I kept 1 case last year, which was even more than I should have, but I kept a case, a resentencing on a first degree murder case. And the sister of the deceased needed to give a statement and read her mother's statement. Her mother wasn't strong enough to deliver it. And Arrow came and laid down on the young woman's feet, across her feet and my feet, because I was standing shoulder to shoulder with her as she tried to get through her statement. And it's real. Your blood pressure goes back down. It gives you encouragement. It's a very real thing. It's not an idea. It's real. And that's why I call it the crown jewel. That division within the office is just truly something extraordinary.
Yeah, I think it's amazing and awesome that you think of the victims and help them get through some really traumatic situations where they're reliving things that nobody wants to have to relive, a tragedy, much less over and over again. So the puppies are awesome.
Yes,
I love
they
them.
Are.
I had the opportunity to meet a few.
Good.
Okay, this is Sexual Assault Awareness Month.
That's right.
So what is the county attorney's office doing to...
It's coming up quickly. For April, which is why I'm so thrilled that you've been talking, Sherry, about Saturday, April 2nd, in your event at the Berger Theater, and where people can go to lawmatters1030.org to get their tickets to such an important presentation and training. It's critical, as we've been discussing, to raise awareness, and that's why these months get dedicated, because it gives us all an opportunity to come together to get the message out to the community. And that's our office, that's law enforcement, it's teachers, as you've said, it's neighbors, raising awareness so that we can recognize warning signs, we can recognize someone who might be in need and take action. So it's a lot of work. Again, it's the Victim Services Division, it's our Domestic Violence and our Special Victims Unit, it's our communications team partnering with law enforcement and producing really helpful guides as well, bilingually. That's been a huge effort, especially by the Tucson Police Department in recent years, and our office as well. When we came in, we knew we had a real need to make sure that our staff were bilingual, so that language wasn't a barrier to getting help and receiving help. And 38% of our new hires last year were bilingual. And so I thank the community for responding to the need.
Yeah, it's huge. And I think people need to understand that it's not just one agency that takes care of this situation. You've got the police department, you've got DEA. There's an organization out there called Power Over Predators. They're going to be there, and they're very proactive to keep this from happening. Mm. Some of the agencies are reactive. Okay, it happened, now what do we do? But proactive... the Power Over Predators people, with Lisa, who's in charge of it, have a scholastic program. They can go to any school and introduce you to the program, and you can be teaching this in your schools. to keep your kids safe. And that's part of what this whole presentation is about. We think everybody should be there because, like Sheriff Daniel said, you don't know what you don't know until you get there and realize, wow, this is happening. My child could be sitting next to me on the sofa and being sex trafficked at the same time. So, you know, you need to understand what the problem is, what the risk, the hazard is, and prevent it.
Well, and along those lines as well, all of our community partners, you know, the Children's Advocacy Center, SACASA, Emerge, all of these organizations, you go to their websites and they have wonderful prevention materials about what parents can do to monitor their children on the internet, right?
How to recognize it.
Absolutely. You know, cell phone use, all the tools you need to recognize the warning signs, keep your kids safe.
Yeah, and it's not an easy job because the internet is. Oh. I remember, you know, we didn't have the internet and all that stuff when I was growing up. And, you know, picking flowers out of the neighbor's garden got you in trouble. This is huge. Yeah, this is amazing.
When our little boy was born, I remember just not even, it was still the first day, and I remember turning to my husband and saying, you know, I think the screen is going to be our biggest parenting challenge, you know, in his first 18 years. Like, just figuring out how to deal with the pervasiveness of the screen and the internet and the access and the constant attention and all of that. You have to get ready as a parent.
This event here will help you get ready as a parent. Absolutely. And hopefully everybody will be there. All you have to do is go to lawmatters1030.org, and the tickets are free. There's, you know, no excuse. And we made it free because we want people to be educated. We want people who maybe can't afford a ticket to be able to join in and be a part of the solution. And this is part of the solution. So we want everybody there. I'm watching you. I want everybody there.
That's wonderful, Sherry.
So let's talk about, I know we've only got a few minutes left. Let's talk about, have you had any successful cases that you want to brag about?
Oh my goodness. There's so many. do we have two more days?
Yeah.
right in an office of 350. The juvenile division is extraordinary. We've talked a lot about stress and anxiety over the last couple of years, and children were deeply affected by that too, you know, not being able to go to school. And so we saw an uptick in, I think, lashing out with that stress and anxiety and not having the support of your school. And so the juvenile unit in particular has really risen to the occasion and worked so hard to keep kids in the juvenile system and not ship them downtown and try them as adults, where frankly we just lose them at that point, and making sure that we're collaborating so that children are getting the services they need. And so an error or a mistake as a child doesn't haunt you the rest of your life. That's right. So that comes to mind. I think our brand new fraud unit has passed the $1 million mark for returned restitution to victims.
That's awesome.
That's extraordinary. Sherry, our entire civil law firm, there's the whole civil side of the house, right? When you're a county attorney instead of a district attorney. And again, the health law unit, the mental health side, you know, tripled in work and rose to the occasion, of course, the pandemic, and provided every county agency with all the support they needed to deal with masking requirements and access to vaccines. And so I could go on and on, but those are some of the biggest ones that come to mind.
Okay, I want to get back to the elder abuse thing real quick. If somebody thinks they've got a problem, or like the situation with my text message with Jacqueline, who do they call? How do they report this?
Thank you so much for asking. Part of the whole point of having a dedicated fraud unit again was having a local place to report. And so you can call my office, or you can simply go to our website. All you have to do is Google the Pima County Attorney's Office. And then there's a little form. It just takes 60 seconds. You just type it right in. It's super easy. And you just say, this is who I am. This is what happened. I suspect it's fraud. And you can just report it right there. And that's what we wanted. We wanted to just make it so easy. Because again, even if you didn't fall victim, it helps us track the patterns. Right.
And it's the patterns that will be able to stand up in court.
Exactly. Precisely.
So, yeah, I hope you all the listeners are taking notes today because there's so much information here. And I want to thank you for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This was a wonderful opportunity.
Yeah, I think our Pima County Attorney's Office is doing great things. And, you know, I just appreciate everybody there.
They work so hard, Cherry.
I know they do. I know a few of them.
Yes, those are true, noble civil servants, right, who stayed dedicated to the mission through the pandemic, through low pay. And I'm humbled to get to work with them.
That's awesome. And I want to thank everybody for listening today. And tune in next week. We've got another great show planned for next week. And until then, shop local and stay safe.